This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Good day. This is Boris Karpa, and this is New Books in Military History. Today we have with us as a special guest, Mr. Justin Jordan, who has written a fairly unique book. A lot of our books which we see here are about people's military experience. We've had memoir books before, but often they are about a combat experience. And Justin's book is a bit different. It's called And Then I Cried, Stories of a Mortuary NCO. And perhaps it would be useful if Justin told us a little bit about it. Justin, welcome to our show.
Thank you. I appreciate the time you're taking and having me. Look forward to our conversation.
So can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. So my book is just a retelling of some of the experiences I had as a mortuary non-commissioned officer, serving both stateside and at deployed location, primarily of the stateside casualties and the emotional toll it took on me doing so many of the mortuary affairs. It's written in a way that I would like you to kind of stand next to me. Because I feel it gives the reader an understanding of what those go through when they develop post-traumatic stresses. So that's a little bit about the book and how it came about.
Well, as I always say on this show, we are creatures of tradition. And one thing which I would like you to drill down on for us is maybe tell us a little bit more about how you've decided to write this book, why you chose to write this.
Absolutely. So I spent just over 20 years in the service. In the latter part of my career, so the second half of my career, I spent a good amount of time as a mortuary non-commissioned officer in charge. That was anytime anyone passed away on duty, whether it be for any cause, I handled the remains all the way from the point of death, all the way to the point of burial, interment, rather. Dealing with families, the remains, you name it. It was a very stoic job. I had to stand there and a lot of times not experience emotion, but I was experiencing emotion and I felt broken because of that. I was grieving the loss of folks or military brothers and sisters that I didn't know. And that had a pretty profound effect on me after years of doing it. So eventually I asked for help. I was sent to a treatment center to get help. It was more of a military tiered track program within a larger behavioral health conglomerate. So it was, I felt like I was treated like a prisoner a lot of times in that program when all I did was ask for help. But I did have a really great therapist, and she mentioned that my stories had a profound effect on the others in the groups as well as herself. And she felt like it would be a service if I would write this down, share it somehow. And that was kind of sparked the idea of writing the book. When I got home from treatment, my career was basically over. They had asked me, why don't you just work from home? You're going to a medical board, you know, come in on Fridays, attend a meeting. So I was kind of just relegated to, you know, just go heal over there, right? That's how I felt thrown away. It's a lot of our military members do. So when I got off duty every day, after sitting there waiting on the emails that never came, I would start to write. And I would handwrite this book, just kind of retelling my stories, much like I would do in group therapy or anything that I'd learned while I was in treatment. And then I would, you know, take those stories and read them back to myself while I was looking in the mirror. And I wanted it to invoke a certain emotion in me. If it didn't, I rewrote it. Then I sent those stories to the people that were with me, chapter by chapter, like, hey, did this happen exactly like I'm saying it did? Because sometimes the memory fills in gaps, right? And I wanted to make sure it was as honest as possible to not to disperse the memory of any of the fallen. And they all came back. Yeah, that's how it happened. So that turned into a collection. I ended up meeting a gentleman that was a publisher, just leading the service himself, Eric Shaw, who founded Tactical 16 Publishing. He read the book and he said, I'd like to publish this for you. And that's how the book came about. In 2012, it hit the market and been out there ever since. I've had a lot of people comment that it's really helped them. And that's the why. It really is the why I wrote the book, in hopes that someone would read it and find a little piece that they weren't alone.
So there is something which I don't have very much knowledge about. Personally, I don't live in the United States. In my country, we have a somewhat different system. And so maybe some readers also don't know this. Can you tell us what is the difference between a mortuary NCO and somebody who is a civilian and they work the same in the ritual sphere? What are the unique duties?
Absolutely. So when you're a mortuary NCO, you're basically the liaison to the commander and to the families of the fallen. You do whatever's needed to include handling the remains from the point of autopsy, ensuring they get to the chosen funeral homes, to overseeing the embalming process, to setting up and inspecting the remains after embalming, during embalming, the entire process, and then setting up the interment or the burial with honors. That includes transportation for families. So a lot of family interaction as a mortuary non-commissioned officer, where I think is what the greatest toll on me, as well as when they're deployed, and if we lose them downrange, making sure that those bodies or those human, we call them human remains or HR, are returned with dignity and respect. Great pains are taken to ensure that every service member that passes downrange or even at stateside is treated with dignity and respect, as if it was one of our actual brothers, like a blood brother, because that's how we feel they are. So just about anything you can think of, including collecting personal effects, to giving the funeral directors, you know, direction on how to process the body, build up different parts that may have been damaged, all of those things. And after a while, that can take its toll on you.
Yes, I could see how it would. And I'd like to connect these two last questions together because, well, the issue of trauma, the issue of post-traumatic stress disorder and other forms of trauma, obviously it's a big part of your book. And maybe you can tell us just a little bit more about the connection between being able to write down your experiences to retell them in this structured way and maybe helping you heal from in some way from what happened. Because we have some of our listeners, because of the nature of our show, some of our listeners are maybe considering writing their own books. Some of them have some of our listeners may have their own burdens to carry. So maybe you can tell them about your experience as a writer. I know you're also a visual artist. Can you tell us how these things have helped you?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. It's powerful. For me, the treatment that really resonated with me during my treatment was cognitive processing, where I would write down the story, and then we would discuss it and break it down, and then find core beliefs that were just not true. A lot of us have that little voice, and a lot of times it's negative, I think, we tell ourselves. So for me, cognitive processing therapy really worked. I'm an auditory learner, so it worked for me because I was able to engage my hands and different things, and I tend to be more of a creative type. So when I would write these things down, especially handwriting was very important to me in the process. Typing just didn't feel it. I had to feel it, right? As I hadn't had the physical pain of writing for hours, right? And then having to rewrite something that didn't just look right or, didn't make sense on paper as your hand wrote. That was part of my healing process, because once I wrote them down, I could then shut the pages, and that's where they live. That's what I tell myself. And that was that's where they live, and I can access them when I want, not the intrusive thoughts that I had struggled with for years into that. So it really helped me kind of reframe it cognitively into a way that was more productive. I write these down, and that's where they live. It sounds very odd or too simplistic almost, but it works for me. And that was what the book represented. That's where those traumas get to live. Now, don't think for a minute that I have forgotten any of them. They just don't get to control me. They live in that book. And that's how I look at it, and it's just a process. A lot of post-traumatic stress disorder is just unprocessed trauma. And I say I don't need to, put it down or anything like that, because I've been struggling with it for years, still struggle to this day, but I have the right tools. And one of those is cognitive processing therapy. So I know what to do when certain things happen. And that's what it represented to me in my healing journey. A place where those traumas live. And I don't have to carry them alone. I allow others to open them, see them, help me carry some of that.
And from this, I would like to, I believe that June was Mental Health Awareness Month in the United States.
I'm not positive, but I'm sure you're correct.
And, in light of the fact that, we have people on this show, some of them are veterans, some of them are experts, who will have their opinions on post-traumatic stress disorder and what its nature is and how to better address it. And, of course, military service is always going to be difficult. It's always going to be hard for some people, it's going to be dangerous, but I always ask anybody who has any expertise, any experience, do you think that there is something which the U.S. military could be doing to maybe better help veterans and servicemen to better protect them or to better help them if they've suffered from this?
Well, I do. I think they do a really good job. To a certain point, and their resources are limited, because what we're trained is small airmen, Marines, Navy, Army, you name it, is, kind of suck it up, right? Like, we're trained that as an American young men and women on the ball fields and the soccer fields and the baseball diamonds, quit being a baby, suck it up. So emotion is kind of repressed from a young age as America. And then we get into the service, and that kind of is exacerbated a little bit. But I think that really in the last decade, they've come leaps and bounds. If we look back at the Vietnam veteran, they were told to repress everything. Take your uniform off. They were spit on by the American public. They were ashamed of their service, some of them, not all of them. And that's just not right now. We see that And it's thank you for your service. And that's lost a little bit of meaning because it's so repetitive to a lot of our younger warriors. But what they've done is they started making it a requirement, certain checkups, and that this post-traumatic distress disorder is kind of destigmatized and making it, you know, okay to ask for help in certain circumstances. But still, there's that fear. Right? I don't want to be the one. I'm the helper. I don't need to be. You see that in the first responder fields as well. The human brain was not meant to see repetitive traumas over and over and over. It just wasn't, and it doesn't respond well a lot of times. It doesn't mean you're weak or you're soft or any of that. It just means that your brain is having a normal reaction to trauma, and that sometimes stays with you. And when I say normal, I'm meaning that it wasn't meant to see this, so it's going to respond in a certain way. That's how I see it. Not everyone agrees with me, but I do believe that the United States military has come leaps and bounds, especially in the last decade, on treating this. And why I became involved with the program I'm in now, Warrior's Heart, where I look her of it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
And of course, I think you're exactly right that the stigmatizing these traumas is very important. After all, we don't, you know, if somebody's physically injured from their military service, if somebody has lost a limb, we don't shame them for having lost a limb. We don't we don't say that they are weak for, you know, having an injury. And it seems to me that if they have a mental health issue due to their service, we should also not diminish them for this. And it's an injury of a sort which they have as a result of what they've done for us. And from this, I would like to just go on about something which you've said. And you worked with different organizations which help veterans. Some of them you've received help from, and others you've volunteered with. In your book, you say that you were the first service member in the United States to serve with a service animal which was assigned to you. And you've also helped others, and you are a business development director for Warrior's Heart, which, as I understand, it's an organization which assists veterans who are having these mental health issues from their service. Can you tell us a little bit more about the work which you do, which your organization does, to assist assist fellow veterans?
So first, I'd like to kind of address the first part of your question, which was talking about Dallas, my service animal. So I was struggling with a lot of different symptoms from conflict trauma. Basically, I would dissociate a lot, where I would, you know, imagine driving home and then not, you know, having to go through these intrusive thoughts and having to complete them, and then looking up and you're 100 miles from your house and you have no idea how you got there. That's a scary thought. So that would happen to me frequently, as well as olfactory hallucinations, where I would smell bodies anytime I had my uniform on. So I really thought I was going, you know, crazy. And I didn't know how to handle it. So I met an organization called Paws and Stripes, and they helped me train my dog Dallas to be a service animal. And she would alert me when I would get to my exit. She would also help me reduce some of the cortisol stress hormones when I would have these different type of anxiety attacks, you know, because that's scientifically proven that when you put your hand on a dog, that reduces some of those stress hormones. So, you know, in 2010, I was allowed to serve alongside with Dallas, which, to my knowledge, there hadn't been a PTSD service on active duty that was recognized by the DOD to that point. So she really helped me get to a lot of years. And then 2013, I retired her, and this last year she passed away. I had a walk with a service animal since 2013. I believe it was a bridge to healing, and not a rare So it really helped me during the time when I needed her. And she lived a very long, healthy life. I miss her dear. That brings me to the second part of your question about Warrior's Heart. So in 2017, I found, or actually 2016, I found an organization that had built a facility in my hometown where I grew up, but where I live currently, and chose to, put our roots out after retirement, Bandera, Texas. It was a place called Warrior's Heart. I didn't know much about it. I had heard it was a rehab for warriors. And I didn't know the definition of how they, defined warriors. I just knew that it was a treatment center. And I was, had my jaws while I was working it. So I didn't pay much attention. I thought, that's great. There's a lot of veterans that can use help. About a year later, I met one of the founders of softball league, Lisa Lanning. Our daughters were playing softball at the high school level together. And we just started talking. And that turned into a conversation about what they do. And she invited me out to see their programs. And long story short, she invited me to come work with Warrior's Heart. In 2017, I agreed, and I became an admissions advocate and outreach coordinator. So my job was to answer the phone when warriors called crisis and get them into treatment. It is a 42-day training program that treats addiction as well as co-occurring psychological disorders to include post-traumatic stress disorder, major depressive disorder, military sexual trauma, you name it, the things that go along with trauma and addiction, we treat it. So I started down that journey, and that was 6 years ago. Since then, I was the admissions director for almost four of those years. And then recently, last year, I was transitioned over into the business development director. So my job is more aligned with the growth of our company and the outreach to those organizations that work with us, so through the military, law enforcement agencies, the VAs, you name it. And recently, I've been heavily involved in our expansion, and I'm happy to announce that we will be opening a new facility September 11th in Virginia. So I've been heavily involved traveling back and forth to Virginia. But that's kind of a little bit about what we do. I'd be happy to answer more questions about it.
And so you've, beyond your personal experience, beyond your personal trauma, you've also had quite a bit of experience assisting veterans as well, assisting other people with issues.
Yes, absolutely. It's, for the last 6 years, my job was to assist warriors to find help and treatment. And to that point, we've had almost 2,500 warriors go through our program here in Texas. These are warriors that otherwise might not have received help. Our program is unique and specific to their needs. That's because we're the only treatment center I know of that only treats that population. There are several programs that are doing great work out there that have track programs within their larger mental health programs. That's all we treat is military, veterans, law enforcement, first responders, and anyone that served their community or country can consider a warrior. So trauma nurses, dispatchers, you name it, Border Patrol, we've seen just about all of those come through our program. We had a great success rate with treating them for their addictions and their traumas.
And so as somebody who has a lot of experience helping veterans, helping first responders, because this is a military history show, because it's a show about military books, I have no doubt that many of our listeners have their own military experience. No doubt some of them are also carrying some burdens from their service. And so I'd like to ask you, as somebody who is professionally involved with assisting warriors, assisting veterans, is there any advice which you want to give these people? That is, you want to tell them to use this opportunity to provide them with some kind of helpful advice?
Absolutely. Thank you. That's an honor. One thing that I would tell any veteran that is struggling is don't be too quick to try to get into the helping of other veterans. A lot of times that's who we are. We're servants, right? We served our country, and now I feel a little bit better so I can go help others. A lot of times we hired in the helping. I'm guilty raising my hand right now. But along the way, if you don't help yourself, if you don't get healed, then you're not going to have anything left. And a lot of times your traumas exacerbate because then you're taking on theirs as well. So what I would say is, just like they say in the airplane, put on your mask first. Make sure that you're good. And then there's time to help the others. And there will always be time to help the others. But don't get too quickly. Make sure that you're good. Make sure that you have the tools to be able to get into a helping career. We long so much to get back to that purpose of helping others, right? Because that's what we lose when we leave the service. A lot of times you had really big jobs and start over after 20 years, and that just doesn't sit well with us. Or we sit at home and we just dwell on the past and the traumas and everything. Well, we know how that ends up a lot of times. At the bottom of the bottle or in the ground. We need to stop that cycle. So what I would say to any veteran that's listening, my most earnest advice would be, don't rush too quickly to help others. Make sure your mask is on first.
Thank you, Justin. This is really important advice. And unfortunately, I've sometimes seen people who probably should have taken this advice, all too common. And, you know, on this show, as I always say, we are creatures of tradition. We have traditional questions which we ask at the start and at the end of every show. And the question which I would like to ask you, which is, again, traditional, you know, because this is a show about books, by readers, for readers, can you tell our listeners what books you are reading right now? Is there something you could maybe suggest to our listeners?
Absolutely. So we do a ton of book studies at Warrior's Heart because we believe, like I said, that our own process and of growth and continuing and professional development is as important as the help we get. Because if we don't have enough in our cup, then we don't have enough to get. So we have to, it's a continuous professional development process. One of our favorite books is Turning Pro by Stephen Pressfield. And that's what we're currently reading now. Also, Rules of the Night, Ethan Hawke, Good and Great. There's tons. But right now, our current book is Turning Pro, and that's what we read.
And can you tell me a little bit more about these books? Because I've not heard of them before.
Basically, yeah. So Turning Pro is a book about just becoming professional, right, in your life and how you do everything. And Ian Pressfield is also the kind author for the War of Art. And he just writes in a way, you know, what it's like to be a professional. But, you know, it's really easy to digest and do a book study on it because it's easily to take snippets from it, discuss it further. But yeah, it's just about being a professional in all aspects of your life. You know, a lot of the books we study are easily digestible that way. It's not long paragraphs of reading. We take one page, read it, discuss it, and we really get the impact of what the author was trying to say, I believe, doing it that way. And that's part of our culture here at Warrior's Heart. Every morning meeting, we have context, and that is we read from the book we're studying currently, and then we discuss it as a team. And every team member gets to discuss it. It's not just for leadership. Every team member gets to discuss.
And the second book which you mentioned was, I believe, Rulers of the Night?
Yeah, it's so Ethan Hawke wrote a small book called Rules for the Night. It's just, you know, one-pagers. I think my favorite, and I'm going to paraphrase, I'm not sure exactly what it says, but I think my favorite page in that book is a knight does not need to announce that he is in basically speaking to humility. But it's just one pagers like that, you know, that talks about it. And it's a good because you can take that throughout your day and just work through them. You know, we talk a lot about positive affirmations. For me, that's a big tool in my toolbox to help, you know, mitigate traumas and when these things come back up, because they do, because life happens and things happen where we don't. Obviously, your traumas come up in different ways. So if you have these tools, they're really good. Positive affirmations, these one-liners that really help me. That is one of those things I remember a knight does not announce that he is a knight. Basically, check your ego.
And so there is a sort of process where both reading and writing benefit a person in terms of their health, in terms of their mental health and their personal development.
Absolutely. So we do a thing with our warriors called Savers, and it's from the book Miracle Morning. And, you know, it's a different, Savers is an acronym for different things. One of those is scribing, right? So an exercise is in there. So, and you'll have to forgive me. Right now, the actual acronym is escaping me. And I'm going to look it up real quick so I have it. It's something we do with our warriors every day. But scribing is very important to that part of our recovery. So being able to write it down. Silence is the first one for S. Affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and scribing. So a couple of days a week, we do that with our warriors. And it's from the book Miracle Morning. And that helps us, you know, just being in silence with ourselves for a little while. Telling ourselves those positive affirmations. Doing some visualization, right? Visualizing what you want. That exercise, right? Even if it's, you know, doing squats or something, you know, leg raises, something, just getting the body moving. Reading something impactful and then scribing about it. And how are you... Yeah, that's how we work through some of that with our.
So, Justin, I would like to thank you for being on our show. A lot of the things which you've said were really enlightening to me. I hope they're enlightening also to our audience. And if or when you write a second book, you're always welcome back here with us.
Well, thank you. I have been working on that. My second book, it's slow going, as most would tell you. I was really, you know, the first book was kind of a passion project. I just could not wait to get it on paper. It needed to pour out of me for my healing. This one, I'm taking my time. It's going to be called Warrior Affirmations. Basically, it's kind of just daily affirmations, but with a warrior twist, a little bit more gritty, a few harsh language words. On a day-to-day basis, but I wanted it to appeal to the warfighter. You know, it looked like a field manual, so I've already, publishers already agreed to get there. So I started writing them down on a day-to-day basis on Twitter and on an account called Warrior Affirmations. So once I get 365, then I'll publish that. That'll be my second.
And as I said, once you have done that, you are welcome again to appear on our show. You know, writing books is a strangely enough, you can. I always tell people who have written a book, you're going to want to write another one.
Yeah.
And right. So thank you for being here with us today, Justin.
Thank you so much for having me.